I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Today in the studio, I have two of New York City's better bartenders, better. Vincent Vitek and Steve Schneider. Hello. From Employees Only and Macau Training Company. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
So you guys are working at two of the places are owned by the same company.
Yes.
Same owners. Employees Only, which has been around for 7 years now. And it's Macau, that's been around for what?
Work, yeah.
Three,
work.
4 years?
No, about two and a half or so.
Okay, and you guys met at Employees Only a little while ago, and over the past few years, you've become friends, and you've been seen around the scene a lot. You know, well, the classic bar scene, and brought together this kind of classic duo. There's a lot of bartenders in New York City that kind of like work in teams like this, mm-hmm. like Brian Miller and Phil Ward. You've got Thomas Wall and Brad Farron.
Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah, that's too.
We're more like Demolition.
Yeah, he's the fucking
animal.
The fucking bushwhacker.
Oh, man. You guys are working at Employees Only, which is known for being one of the, as far as like the classic cocktail scene's been one of the originals with, you know, places like Pegu Club, Flat
Well, I
Iron.
Think with Employees Only, it's more that it might not be the most perfect bar, but it's the most fun that you could have at a cocktail bar. Mm-hmm. Like, you're guaranteed a good time when you come to Employees Only.
Absolutely.
Cool. And you guys, obviously, you focus on classic cocktails. A book just came out.
Yes.
The Employees Only.
Like, yeah, it's called Speakeasy.
That's
called
right.
Speakeasy. It came out in the fall.
There's a picture of me in the introduction.
That's all he's got in there is a picture. some of us have a cocktail.
Yeah, the Steve-O tuxedo. It's a fucking gin whatever with a dash of orange bitters. Yeah, this is great.
Hey, man. Hey, it's a classic, you know?
Yeah,
it's groundbreaking. A new classic.
that just came out
yes.
last year.
No, during the fall, yeah.
In the fall. And you guys have been selling quite a bit. I've been seeing it behind a lot of the other bars around town. Because there's always like a library of like classic books and modern books behind a lot of the bars around town. And it's cool to see like a modern cocktail book up there, you know, sitting on the shelf with, William Schmidt's
Dale DeGroff's books.
Yeah,
like
totally.
That.
I mean,
yeah, I mean, we're honored. Jay and Dushan did a great job on the book. Mm-hmm. We did everything we could to help them. They're our mentors, and it's a fun read. It's a nice thing to see different cocktail bars, like what they're doing. I know Jim Meehan has a book coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty excited about that. He's a brilliant guy, brilliant cocktail mind, and it's fun to see what everybody else is doing. Because, you know, this is it's our city. You know, this is the center of the universe, right?
Absolutely. So. And speaking of that, you know, we just mentioned a few of the bigger names in modern mixology, modern classic mixology, however you want to put it. So, a lot of times with this scene of in this industry of like classic bars and like, you know, cocktail forward bars, you do see a lot of the same guys around. You know, a lot of them have worked at a bunch of different bars, mm-hmm. in the city. That, you know, like you just mentioned, Jim Meehan, you know, he was at Gramercy and at he's at PDT now, and it's really great to see so many familiar faces a lot of the time, and it's kind of built up to like a camaraderie between bartenders and almost like a brotherhood or sisterhood.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
And yeah, you guys definitely represent that, like part of that, you know. And so when you guys, you were telling me earlier that you guys don't, nowadays, you kind of work half of the week separately. Like one of you is on one half.
Yeah, well, it's like college schedule. Like if I was working Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Steve would be working Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. You
know? Right.
So basically the job we do, we're split up basically halfway and halfway. So we rarely get a chance to work together. We hold it down throughout the week, but whenever we do get a chance to work with each other,
it's epic.
It's epic. Like what? It's like
epic.
Who's running the asylum?
The inmates are
the inmates the, run the asylum when we work together for sure. Especially down in Macau, this place that I recently started there just several weeks ago, just on Saturday nights. Vince and I had a chance to work there a few Saturdays ago, and it was epic, I'd say.
It was the most monumental experience that the GM had ever seen.
And you know what? And we were just having a great time. All we were doing was doing something we'd normally do on a Monday night. You know, we had couple girls in the bar, we had this going on, we had people making out, stuff like that. Everybody's having a great time, but they were enjoying great cocktails as well. So
that's what it's all about, man. So,
happiness, baby. Yeah, happiness.
Absolutely. Now Fox. That place, Macau's pretty Macau's a pretty big place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is there a service bar like somewhere else?
Yeah, it's actually split up. Upstairs is where I work on Saturdays, upstairs, it was the main dining area with the sophisticated crowd, I call it. I say that very loosely. But then downstairs is the lounge area.
That's
so there's
I
two
work.
Different bars. Yeah, that's where Vincent works. He works downstairs in the dungeon. He works downstairs. It was really dark and stuff like that. I'm really upstairs with the lights. He's downstairs with the dark.
My mom's really proud of me for, you know, working in a basement in New York. It's great.
No, but it's great. It's more, you know, more of a tighter spot, really intimate stuff downstairs is. Upstairs is where the main dining area is. And so we spread out the crowd among upstairs and downstairs. And it works really well. It works surprisingly well. The place is huge. But, you know, people are going in there and they're having a great time.
So with that, you have the capability of entertaining a lot more guests at one time. So there's certain things that can be controversial about like classic cocktails, like the fact that at employees only you don't use jiggers. Do you observe the same practice at Macau?
The same practice at Macau, yes. We're taught by the same mentors. We're one big group of bartenders, all family, and we make drinks the same way. And everything we do is a tribute to people that came before us.
Yeah.
And so we don't do it to not only to save time to bang out drinks like a maniac. But also, I think it provides a more personal feel to the drink as well. Totally. Like for me, recipes are guidelines. Once you set guidelines, that means you have to. Once you set like a recipe and you set it in stone, you have to adhere to that recipe. You know. Mm-hmm. But if they're guidelines, you know, you can make it a little sweeter for somebody if you want. You know, and you're using all your senses, not just these little measurement tools. Like, I don't need a tool to teach me how to pour a fucking ounce. You know, I know what the hell an ounce is, and. Once again, I'm not knocking anything else. I'm just saying this is my style. This is what I do. And, you know, and what I love about this business is that there's so many different styles. There's so many different great bartenders, and everybody takes pride in their work. Everybody does things a different way.
Right.
And but the way Steve does things is a little bit better than everybody else.
No, what are you talking about, man?
I'd like to take this time to, like, actually bring, you know, to light that Steve does it.
Vince is not even wearing a shirt right now. So. I appreciate that, Vince. No,
none of us are.
No, but once again, when I feel like when I say that recipes are guidelines, it means now I don't have anything to tell me how to make this. I don't have any tools to make me teach me how to make this drink.
Yeah.
I have to use all my senses. I have to use my eyes. I have to smell it. I have to taste it all the time. You know. And it's tricky, and it's a hard thing to master. And you know, I still fuck up drinks, and you know what? I take pride in everything I do, and it's great. And you know, if I can't fuck it up once again, I won't take pride in it.
Yeah.
Even if you fuck it up, at least you have a good time. Like if you come and see us at the bar, you'll always have a good time.
Totally. And you know, it's kind of interesting that way, that I was just thinking, you know, it's almost these days more important to just know all of the ingredients that go into the drink rather than the measurements, because if you're a good enough bartender, you know balance.
Absolutely.
And you don't need a jigger. I mean, it's kind of a controversial gray area in this.
That's why they're guidelines. That's what I was going to say. They're guidelines.
If you know the ingredients, though, you're set.
Like, yeah, your lime juice, for instance.
Yeah, it's like if you're going to jigger out, like, juices or whatever, like, your lime juice at the beginning of the night isn't going to be the same at the end of the night. Like, it has time to oxidize or whatever. Like, if you're going to jigger out juices, you might as well just, like, buy Tropicana. Like,
yeah.
And not use, like, fresh juices. Like,
totally.
So if you don't do it off of taste, then, like, you really don't know what you're doing, and you're just kind of following, like, a recipe that doesn't make sense.
And also, let's not forget that we're here to be of service. Have a drink whiskey. Yeah. No, we're here to be of service of the people. The people in the crowd. The people that's the pulse. These are the people that are paying you. These are people that are coming in. They're keeping your doors open, and they really see us the way they do it. Like, you know, we don't have TVs. None of these cocktails have TVs, but like, we are the TVs. They watch us work. They watch us in high volume crank out these cocktails really fast. But you know, they see that we're using all of our senses to build these cocktails. We're actually putting care into it. Not just using an arbitrary, you know, 3/4 ounce.
I mean, if you watch Steve bartend, he's like the Justin Timberlake of bartenders.
Why?
No, it's funny because, like, you know, actually the busboy would have to come by with a mop to mop up the panties on the floor when Steve is bartending.
Oh, my God. Aren't you happy, though, that Vincent came along?
Thanks for being on the show, guys.
Yeah, sure. You're no problem.
But going back to the whole, like, measuring out citrus thing, it is interesting because the citrus does oxidize over the course of the service.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there's another, like, in the very beginning days of Prime Eats, I had all the bartenders for everything that had citrus in it. If you needed lime juice, you cut a lime in half and put it in a hand juicer and put it in the glass. Same with a lemon, you know, orange, everything. We actually hand juiced all the juice to order for every drink.
Yeah.
But there's, and while it was cool and people were kind of freaked out by, like, the primitive nature of that, you know, like, I'm talking about customers, you know, it's inconsistent. I mean, from drink to drink.
From lemon to lemon.
From lemon to lemon, lime to lime, everything. Yeah, so like one can be really acidic, the other one can be sweeter. So, yeah, I mean, who's to say, you know, you're not going to make the same drink every time. And if everyone made the same drink the exact same way, there would be no need for different bars. You can just have one chain of one bar that does everything.
Applebee's. Applebee's everywhere.
Well, it depends if you're going to a bar to get a cocktail or if you're going to a bar to get laid. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I know totally. Why I go to a bar. For cocktails.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
I was actually at a phone interview with Business Week earlier today, and they were asking about, like, what, just on that subject, like, what when people order certain drinks, how you perceive that person, like, what you think about that person, how you, like for instance, like, somebody that orders a vodka soda as opposed to a Negroni, and it's like, you know what? That person that orders the vodka soda, they don't want to taste anything. They just want to get drunk. Yep. And yeah, so like, yeah, you go to a cocktail bar.
Especially if they order a vodka soda baby.
Vodka soda baby.
Vodka soda baby.
Well, at a quote unquote cocktail bar, I think all bars should be cocktail bar. I think all bartenders should know how to make. That's why, you know, you hear a lot about, there's so many cocktail bars out. So many cocktail bars. There's so many fucking non-cocktail bars out there, you know? Yeah. So the more cocktail bars, the better, I say. But anyway,
I mean, it's basically just now becoming a respected profession. You know.
Yeah, but once again, whole, you know, vodka soda, whatever. Yeah, they want to get drunk, whatever. But at midnight on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, you know, vodka soda is my favorite cocktail to make. But you try not to pass judgment because once again, you work for the people that are ordering from you. You know, I'm at their service, whatever they want. But you know, of course, as a passionate bartender and you know, sort of artistic in that way in the cocktails. You're at a cocktail bar. You take pride in your awesome cocktails. You want to give everybody a cocktail.
Yeah,
it's like ordering, you know, fish in a steakhouse. You know, like, yeah, I mean, you're there. You know.
Yeah.
Order steak, you know, like you're at a world-renowned cocktail bar. You know, order a cocktail, try something new, you know?
Totally.
Have one of those. And but sometimes it's just not for people, but they're there with friends or whatever. And
yeah, you can't.
You know, I don't care what they're there for. You know, I'll do, you know, if they're paying, I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Totally. They're your guests. You, mm-hmm. you take care of them.
That's right.
Let me ask you this. It's like we were speaking earlier about like high volume and that being the reason why you don't jigger so you can just bang out cocktails. Have you ever had someone like, because you're constantly. You guys are constantly just banging out drinks on the weekends.
And we feel blessed. We're very, very fortunate to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good thing that we get to make that many drinks.
Yes. Totally. Have you ever had customers comment on how busy you are? I've been talking with some other bartenders about this because I've actually had people get pissed off at me because I can't talk to them. And I'm like, look, I'm at work. This is what happens on a Saturday night. Or be like, take it like offensively that I'm so busy and like there's no one there to help me, blah blah, but well, I'm still banging out
sometimes
drinks.
Yeah, like friends know better. Real friends, they know better. Hey, this guy's busy, whatever.
Or yeah, yell I'm talking at me just now like the regular
yeah
customer.
Some people the regular old Yelpers or whatever. Yeah they get angry because they want to talk to the bartender about what he's making, why he's making it.
Yeah,
but that's exactly why we have cocktail hour. You know, we have from early.
Cocktail hour ends at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah. From exactly. 6 to 9.
From exactly. 6 to 9, your cocktail hour is now over, and then we go into, like, you know...
The shit show.
Yep. What, then what happens...
epicness.
What happens after 10, after midnight.
No, the other yep. night, there was this woman that was asking Brata his opinion on port at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. Bar completely, it's like 5 deep, and she's like, well, but... I want something a little more dry. Like, it's like we're making like hundreds of cocktails, and it's like, no, it's just something a little more. It's like, okay, yeah. I was like, she asked me, and I was just like, no. Talk to the guy you were talking to.
Yeah, there you go.
I was like, I'm coming.
You know,
back
we joke, we make fun because that's what we like to do. We like to have fun, make fun. But you know, ultimately, it doesn't matter what time of day, what time of night, they come in because they hear that we're great at what we do.
Yeah.
So we have to deliver night in, night out, no matter how busy we are.
Totally.
And that's tricky. It's a hard thing to do, and it takes a long time to master it. And you know, we make a lot of money doing it, and we have such a great time doing it together. That's why there's always 3, sometimes 4 guys behind both bars.
Absolutely. You know, speaking of that camaraderie and having fun with it, like I love that. Like anytime, because I just recently met you guys and started seeing you around mm-hmm. at different functions, like USBG functions, different cocktail competitions, stuff like that. One of the great things about that camaraderie and that like brotherhood of bartenders is like having fun with them, like fucking talking
absolutely.
Shit.
Absolutely, yeah, totally. Yeah, the whole before the cocktail jam, USBG cocktail jam last month. Yeah, we were
that
just
was,
doing nothing.
That was all it was. It was like part of the competition was talking trash.
I even talked shit about that. Yeah. I wasn't even in
he wasn't
it.
In yeah, it. He came, said he something to, yeah, he was talking shit to other bartenders about it. But yeah, but once again.
I mean, it's hard not to make fun of Frankie cocktails.
Kip's big boy.
Sorry, Frankie.
Uh-oh.
I didn't mean it.
Oh, so
speaking of
yes,
which,
I did. Yes, like, I did.
Speaking of which, he had the thing in what was it? Timeout.
Mm-hmm.
About the tattoo thing.
Unfortunately, I didn't read it, but I heard about it.
No, there's a thing in Timeout New York about these cocktail bartenders and their cocktail tattoos, and I think it's not the original cocktail tattoo, but like the EO tattoo is like. Definitely like a link in the chain of like
yeah there's only a few of us bartenders and 7 of us have the tattoos, you know.
I mean, so for our listeners, you explain that?
Well, I mean, you can get like a Sailor Jerry style tattoo with the girl holding a cocktail glass, but the guys at EO, we're so like,
that's employees only.
Employees yep. only. We're so like closely knit that we actually have a tattoo of the logo like all the same in different places. Yeah,
which is an E and an O, and it looks like a key.
Yeah,
like, it's a really
O,
cool
it's
deco
like
design.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's 7 of us. We have them. 2 of the owners, but then a lot of the bartenders, all different races. You know, we have guys from Serbia, Montenegro. We got guys from Bosnia. We have guys from Texas, like Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
We got me,
Texas,
local of the New York, New Jersey area. We have Dev from Los Angeles. You know, we have all the guys with their tattoos, all different spots. and it brings us together. You know, a lot of places say, you know, this is a family, it's a family. Well, I've worked at several places, and employees only is a family. The owners are bartenders. They're with us.
Yeah.
One of my first Thursday nights, I'm working hard, and Igor Hadjismailovic, one of the owners, he's bartending with me. We're so slammed, he taps me on the shoulder, and he pours a shot of Jameson right down my throat. And I was like, that was the owner just poured a shot of fucking Jameson down my throat. I'm like, I'm going to love this place. Yes.
Awesome. Well, when we get back from, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about that camaraderie.
The epic camaraderie.
And yeah, we'll talk more about the family. Family style. There we go.
Woo!
That's it.
Woo! If you can't, then it doesn't matter anyway. You will never understand it, cause it happens too fast. And it feels so good, it's like walking the glass. It's so cool, so hip, it's alright. It's so groovy, it's out of sight. You can touch it, smell it, taste it so sweet. But it makes no difference, cause it's not your fucking beat.
This is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at noon, Dave Arnold, the author of CookingIssues.com, will discuss new and innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients. Call in with your own questions to see if Dave and the crew can solve your cooking issues. Again, that's Tuesdays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
We're back in the studio today. We have Vincent Vitek and Steve Schneider, both from Employees Only and Macau Trading Company.
Ooh.
Yeah!
I think I can solve cooking issues like...
Like Dave Arnold?
Yeah, like, yeah. I think I could do it.
That guy's the man.
You know what? I quit.
no more bartending.
Yeah, no more bartending.
We gotta figure out these cooking issues.
Yeah.
So many. So, okay. I just recently met you guys, like, a few months ago. We realized we have a history. We have a history, yes, Vincent.
We have a history.
Our bands played a Bourbon Week concert.
It was Bourbon Heritage Month.
Bourbon Heritage Month.
September, and I got Maker's Mark to sponsor us at
Brooklyn Bowl.
Brooklyn Bowl. Yeah. We played there.
It was funny because your band is called Baby Brother, and my band's called Brothers. And then there was like Sister Sparrow and the...
That's Ollie Kinchelow's
band. So it was all these like sibling bands.
We love you, Ollie.
Brothers and sisters. What's even funnier is the lead singer from your band, Billy,
mm-hmm.
he works for WWE.
Let me tell you something, brother.
I ended up going out with one of the WWE divas. I had to say it.
Yeah.
That's right, brother. All my employees only brothers.
Mr. Big in the house.
Yeah, so that was crazy. I didn't realize until we realized that from the photographer that was shooting both of our bands at different times on his website that, like, oh shit, I know that guy.
Like, oh, I know those.
Crazy. And then we didn't realize it. We were both bartenders until a little while later.
Well, we should play another show together soon.
We should. When is your band playing again?
My band is playing this Saturday at Brooklyn Fireproof.
Oh yeah,
at some
that's pretty
time.
Close here.
Yeah. No, it's around the corner. It's just some sort of artist co-op.
Like, Google it.
Google it.
Google it. Google me.
Buy Baby Brother's album on iTunes.
Cool.
That's pretty interesting. But we had a chance to meet a different way.
Yeah.
But not quite the band related way, but more of a bar related way.
Yeah, totally.
And it was nice to meet you at the cocktail jam. We had a lot of fun. A lot of people came out. EO crowd came out and
lots of shit talking.
Yep.
EO love.
But
yeah. So okay. We were talking a little bit before about this whole like brotherhood of bartending, and I think it's really cool that there's an actual, like, with all the competitions, you know, there's not a lot of competition between us, you know, like, everyone goes to these competitions and like goes into the finals and everything, and there's a lot of like ribbing and stuff, but in the end it's really like healthy competition, and it's really more networking than anything.
More networking and more just learning and getting better.
I think when people get into these competitions, like most people just roll their eyes at the competition and be like, it's just like to whoever is like tasting it, like what they are in the mood for that day or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
yeah, I mean, but all that stuff is like on the back burner from what it really like competition really means. I mean, it's really about learning more about other bartenders in the city or in the country, in the world, and just coming together and also testing yourself as well in these cocktails. Like Vincent has a cocktail in the Canton finals coming up in mid May. Mm-hmm. Domaine de Canton. I have one, Don Q, fucking Moses, and I. We fucking Moses. Fucking Moses, little boy from Red Rooster.
God, I can't send this.
We qualified for the Moses, New York Don Q finals. And once again, it's fun. It's cool to be part of a finals of anything, do cocktail stuff. But you know what? I learned a lot from everyone else that competed about what they're doing, how they feel about certain things, and it's nice to just know people in bars. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now ever since I joined the USBG, I've met a lot of bartenders, a lot of great bartenders, bartender hell that are 10 times better than me, and I now have a place to go drink, you know, a lot of places in the city,
totally,
and
totally.
And they have a place to always have a home in my home for sure. USBG is a great. It's a great organization. Healthcare for bartenders over there is really great. I highly recommend. And I didn't come from that. I didn't come from a place where people were really loved each other and had that camaraderie.
Yeah.
I started my career over 9 years ago in Washington, D.C. in a shitty, smelly dive bar.
Mm-hmm. As most of us did.
Yes. And a lot of people did. I was in the United States Marine Corps at the time. And I was gung-ho Marine all the way. I was working down there in D.C. I was a native of this area, of course. Then I had an accident. I had brain surgery. I was in a coma for a few days. I don't want to get into the actual accident, but they put a few plates in my head, and I was in a coma a while. I had to relearn a lot of stuff. I was really fucked, and I couldn't do my Marine Corps job anymore. So after 4 years, I got discharged. I was bartending while I was in the Marines. I was bred for this stuff. And but then I had nothing left. The Marine Corps was my life. I had nothing left. So I guess I was reborn in a bar.
Yeah.
And that's where I started taking my job seriously, even though it was a shitty place, swinging disco shots and Jager bombs and Heinekens. And what do you call it? I got recruited from there. My passion, somebody, friends of a friend, I met a gentleman named John Hogan, who him and Tobin Ellis partners over there at Bar Magic in Las Vegas. Yeah. And that's where he took me under his wing, and I took apprenticeship under John Hogan, and he's just one of my original mentor, and I thank him all the time. But he taught me all the Vegas stuff, the molecular mixology,
right, the West Coast,
the awesome garnishes, the beautiful cocktails,
molecular,
this and that,
molecular,
yep, all this stuff. So that's where I learned from him. Then from there, I missed the New York area, so I came back. Either way, I worked in these fine dining establishments, this and that. I was doing consulting, met a few guys. I ended up meeting the employees-only guys a few years ago at this event we all did, and we all hit it off right away. I met these guys, and we had girls in the bar, was lighting shit on fire, made a big mess at the Highline Ballroom, which I apologize for. And one of the bartenders, Bratislav, he's like, hey, we're opening Macau. Why don't you come work for us? So...
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
You know what?
Vincent said that.
That's right, Bratislav.
No, so...
I love that
guy. So anyway, so I one thing led to another. I ended up behind the bar employees only, and I consider myself like a 5-tool bartender. I've been to shitty dive bars. I've been at the fancy places. I know the molecular stuff. I'm a jack of all trades, I guess you could call it, and I take pride in that. And I try to learn a little bit about every subject to be sort of a jack of all trades, you know, a master of nothing.
Yeah, that's a good place to be, actually.
And the guys at EO, Dushan, Jay, Igor, and Henry, Billy, all of them, they sort of like took all the prior experiences I had and just they kind of just shot it out. And now I've become whatever I've become, but I'm very successful and I'm very happy. I think I'm at the top of my game right now.
Awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'll drink to that.
Yeah,
cheers.
Let's just drink to that. You know,
drink to me. Hogging the mic with my stories. Thank you, everybody, for listening to that.
Well, thanks for telling us. That was interesting, man. You know, speaking of, like, you know, making a like a name for yourself, you know, you recently had a an article, I think it's out right now in Esquire.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah, it must be cool. Like, was that work?
Well, you
was
know,
that written by David Wondrich or
no?
David, I know Wondrich, he does write for Esquire. Still, right?
No, yeah, he does. But no, that was written by a gentleman named Matthew Goulet. He contacted me through our GM Eric at Employees Only.
Cool.
You know, if just if you you treat everybody right, you take care of everybody. You know, you treat it doesn't matter who's at your bar. Treat everybody right, it's going to come back. And that's what happened to me. You know, I'm just I like to be as professional and as I can at all times and have a lot of fun. And before you know it, I got a call to get interviewed for this Esquire thing, and it was awesome. And it got great responses from it. You know, I'm getting quoted by, you know, legends like Simon Ford. And
that's awesome, man.
That's right, legends like Simon
Ford.
We're
very fortunate to be working in the place that we're working and to be taken under the wing of the people that...
Yeah,
you that run it.
Like,
yeah.
They got to pay props.
Like, these guys are really, like... I mean, if Steve was working at, like, it doesn't matter.
Applebee's?
Like, yeah, if he was working at Applebee's, like, Esquire wouldn't be contacting him. Yeah. But, like, yeah, you know, these guys that employees
only... Yeah, you definitely only, have to, like...
These guys at Employees Only, they have taken us under their wing. They have, like, accepted us into their family and, like, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want Steve Schneider for Esquire. They wanted Employees Only's bartender, Steve Schneider. Yeah, yeah, and, totally. And I accept that. And you know what? That's something that a few years from now, when I own my own restaurant... I'm gonna, you know, I pay homage to them, but hopefully one day I get a call saying, "Hey, I want one of your bartenders," because you know, we like to keep the ball rolling. One of Steve Schneider's bartenders, you know, several
totally,
years
man.
Down the road, you know,
that's
I'm still very young.
That's a great point.
These guys, they put a lot of work and effort into making like one of the best cocktail bars in the world, like,
and one of the best cocktail bartender teams in the world.
Totally. Yeah, well, I mean, they. This is the only place that I've worked at that they did it right.
Yeah.
Well, it's designed by bartenders. You know, yeah. It's not designed by Applebee's.
It's a bar. It's a bar.
This show is brought to us by Applebee's.
Applebee's.
Man, did we
fly? It's like, would you like a sizzler?
You know, we're knocking Applebee's the whole time. We gave them more press than any than Employees Only. Fuck yeah.
Let's go back and focus on Employees Only. You know, okay, so speaking of Esquire and Wondrich, One thing, Steve, that you're known for, kind of an affectation of your personality, is you have these giant wooden mallets that you use, like old school, like carpenter's mallets that you use, and you brought one today that's crazy.
That's about 45 pounds. I wish everybody could see.
We'll take a picture and post it on the website.
That's right.
So
20 pounds is not 45.
It's not 45.
Well, for me, I'm a skinny guy. It feels like 45 pounds. I'm not in the Marine Corps anymore, okay?
Right. So,
skinny or not, 20 is 20.
So, I'll tell you, you're lucky there's no cameras here, because Vincent looks like he just rolled out of bed. So.
So these hammers, you kind of like made this like kind of your thing. But it was David Wondrich who kind of turned you on to these giant wooden mallets for crushing ice.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to pay homage to him. He is someone that I look up to.
We all do.
Every time I see him, he's a brilliant, brilliant man. Great, even better person. As brilliant as he is as a cocktail historian, he's an even better person.
Yeah.
I had a chance to meet him a few times, talk to him. A couple years ago at Employees Only, he was doing some sort of video for I don't really know what. But either way, I was there. I set up the bar for him a little bit. I was barbacking at the time. And he made me this gin julep. It was amazing. He put ice in a canvas bag with a dollar sign and had this little carpenter's mallet and started smashing ice. And I was like, that was fucking cool. I want to do that.
Yeah.
So me, of course, my personality... I like to go above and beyond the call of duty at all times, so I purchased these ginormous, obnoxious, huge-sized mallets, and it just so happens to coincide with the Thor movie and everything like that. And but not only is it just a fun way to crush ice, it turns people's heads whenever I do it at competitions or even like whenever I bring it to work every now and then. I'm sort of trying to save it for my own restaurant because I don't want to break anything behind the bar at EO or Macau, but. But yeah, it's more or less fun, but it's also like kind of a symbol, a subtle or not so subtle symbol of strength, you know, of strength. And like from what I've had to go with my brain surgery, this and that, it's like this, you know, the big hammer, you know, like America, you know, you know, like build it. You know, it's like, you know, it's just a symbol of strength and sort of like crushing, you know, like crushing anything in your way, any sort of like adversity, you know.
That's great, man. That's great.
Would you say you've gotten directly laid from crushing ice with a big ass mallet?
Well, I'm a man in love, so I'm a man in love, so I'm not gonna comment on that. But yeah.
Well,
Steve, we weren't supposed to share our feelings.
Oh Lord.
I can't wait for you guys to listen back to the show and hear you say So yeah, so on that subject, actually, the Derby's coming up May 7th.
Speaking of crushed ice,
Speaking of crushed ice, and today we're gonna let's talk about mint juleps, man.
Well, I happen to have a mallet and a canvas bag and some ice and some mint and some bourbon.
Yeah, a mallet. And,
A little bit of other things in the house. So yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and make a mint julep. Let me just we're short of glassware, so I'm just gonna take a shot of this bourbon.
That's in my glass. Let's finish. Let's clean these out.
Here, guys. Mm-hmm. We're going to take the shot, and then I'm going to toast everyone, because that's usually the way we do it. Right?
Let's do everything backwards.
So Vincent went ahead and got some mint for us.
Awesome. So basically, the mint julep is the official drink of the Kentucky Derby, and it's been around for a long time. We don't have julep cups here. We're just going to use some rocks glasses. Well, I probably shouldn't have said that. We're just going to imagine that we're drinking out of silver cups.
It's radio.
I always drink out of silver cups. No matter what I drink.
Yeah, I drink out of gold cups.
I don't know. I don't know how you roll.
So eat it. So the julep is actually a style of drink. A lot of people, you know, like obviously nowadays everything gets called a cocktail, anything that's a mixed drink. Just like in the 90s, everything that was in a V-shaped glass, it was mixed, anything could be called a martini. So a little bit about the julep. It's typically kind of like a sangria in a way, where it's just like spirit and sugar. But this is on crushed ice, comes in a julep cup, and we've got today we're using a little bit of Angostura thrown in there just for added value. Do you make any variations on the
what's your julep recipe?
I have one that I use Bronca Menta instead of mint.
Oh yeah,
and sugar.
We make a similar drink. We make stingers.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, cool. Yeah, Thomas Waller does it when he does I think he's doing a stinger with a Bronca Menta as well. It's really fun to like find those ingredients and just use them in different ways. But yeah, I do mine with like a tiny bit of raspberry syrup and creme de cacao and a ton of like bonded bourbon. Ends up being like, you know, the classic combination of raspberry chocolate.
We have to adjust the microphone.
Yeah, let's
put
the mic on the floor.
Yeah.
Is it the floor? Am I gonna drill a fucking hole in this thing or?
I don't know. We're gonna find out.
If anybody could see this would be amazing.
Well,
time to bring.
This is how they used to do it before television. Don't worry, we're in an old shipping container, turned into a radio station, so. I'm sure it can handle it.
So there we have it. Just a few,
about
a few bangs of the what have you.
And shoot you out of a cannon, buddy.
A few bangs of the what have you, and we got crushed ice. So let me just use my ice scoop and put it in the glass.
Now there's three of us here, and you made one drink.
Well, we gotta share. Like, where's the fire, my friend? Where's the fire? Where is the fire, brother?
I got a big ass lighter. Like, come on.
Yeah,
man.
He's got the lighter. You know, where's the fire?
So, okay, in a classic mint julep, we typically have sugar, mint, and bourbon on crushed ice, usually garnished with tons of mint with a short straw and a little bit of powdered sugar on top, but there's all kinds of variations on the mint julep, like the Georgia julep, which uses peach brandy. There, speaking of David Wondrich, you know, he popularized the like the prescription julep.
The one with Geneva?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
The prescription julep has rye and brandy and...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the julep that he made me when I first met him was with the julep with Geneva,
which is a really great variation.
That was
too.
Great. Yeah. Well, like, you know, traditionally that was like the main thing was the, you know, juleps with whiskey and then gin, but whiskey's kind of transcended the Geneva julep.
Yeah.
But it's coming back. We make a great one at Employees Only. Well, Deshaun, it's in the book, Speakeasy. gin on gin julep, it's called, that mixture of Plymouth and Geneva, just to kind of cut that maltiness.
Yeah, totally.
We call it a gin on gin julep, and I'm a big fan of it. I'm actually going to be in San Francisco on... I'm leaving on Monday, next Tuesday and Wednesday, May 3rd and 4th. I'll be at Beretta and De La Rosa, two places out in San Francisco, working with a man named Ryan Fitzgerald, who I have not met, but I've heard great things about him.
It's great. I was actually out there a couple months ago. I did the same trip. I worked at Beretta and De La Rosa with Ryan Fitzgerald. He's a great dude. Just prepare yourself to drink a lot of tequila.
Opa!
he sure likes it a lot. But Beretta and De La Rosa, that's this coming Tuesday and Wednesday, right?
Yeah, this coming Tuesday and Wednesday. So all the people out there listening in San Francisco, out in Radio Land, I'll be out there. I love San Francisco.
Awesome.
I think it's a wonderful, wonderful restaurant and bar scene.
They're really into it.
It's great, but I know it's a lot smaller than New York, but one thing I've noticed, I was out there for the first time last year, and... One thing I noticed is it okay? Yeah. I just used mint syrup. Is that all right?
Nice mint julep, man. Right?
Thank you. One thing I noticed about San Francisco, what I was very impressed was the general people. I was just sitting at a bar and I saw this middle-aged husband and wife come on. No, they're not bartenders. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about stuff on the menu and they're like talking about booze and they know exactly what all the products are, what good food is, what good drink is.
Yeah, they're really into it out there, man.
And you know, if there was no New York, I'd be out in San Francisco because I would love to serve people that know what the hell they're doing.
That makes no sense.
No,
if
I'm
there was no New York, I'd be out in San Francisco. Yeah, of course. It's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard ever.
Well, here we are. I mean, I'm no college professor here, I love New York. It's my home. I'll never leave, but let me tell you, with San Francisco, you know, you can't fool these people. They know, the general people, they know everything.
Yeah.
I feel like in New York, sometimes the marketing, it's a marketing capital. Well, sometimes some marketing people could, that's where we get the whole vodka soda crowd, you know?
Totally.
Which I'm sure everyone has their own vodka soda baby crowd, but, you know, which is fine.
Ciroc and Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Ciroc and Diet Coke, can I get that?
Which is fine, you know, like.
No.
But the knowledge of the people out there, the average person in San Francisco is... out of this world.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, have fun while you're out there, and thanks a lot for making this mint julep for us. The Derby's coming up on May 7th, so everyone get your crazy hats going. Go see Baby Brother this Saturday at Bourbon Fireproof. Rocking out. And go see Steve in San Francisco this Tuesday and Wednesday.
Come fly with me, baby.
Steve, Vincent, thanks a lot for being on the show.
Damon, thank you so much.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. Thanks to Jack Inslee, my producer. We'll see you next week. Thanks. Cheers. Now when you see him
stumbling up and down the street. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. Boys, he's high. Just look at them two black eyes. You know I wouldn't lie. In 2010, EscapeMaker.com won an Emmy Award for their agritourism webisode. So this year they thought, why not bring agritourism and green getaway ideas right to you? Come to the Green Getaways Local Food and Travel Expo on April 30th at One Hanson Place, home of the Brooklyn Flea and former Williamsburg Savings Bank. Presented by Amtrak, Zipcar, and I Love New York, the carbon-free event will be a day filled with food, prizes, workshops, and kids' activities. Over 50 getaway destinations, from counties to local farms and bed and breakfasts within a day's drive or train ride of New York City, will be exhibiting on the main floor and in the huge bank vault downstairs. See what's hot in sustainable travel and receive special show-only discounts. Grow NYC will be doing workshops on the green market, and Appalachian Mountain Club will offer workshops on adventure bicycling and hiking via mass transit. EscapeMaker.com will be giving away over 50 getaway prizes, ranging from zipline adventure passes to an overnight stay at Mohonk Mountain House. Travel greener, eat local. Come to the expo on April 30th. Get your tickets now at www.escapemaker.com. The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.